good thing.
We'll bring the House Labor and Commerce Committee to order. Today's date is February 22nd, 2006, Wednesday. The time is 4:02 p.m. We do have a quorum, members present, Representative Crawford, Guttenberg, Lynn, and myself, Chairman Anderson. Today's schedule, we have Senate Bill 260, Extend Task Force on Workers' Comp, Senator Seekins, HB 394, Insurance Policies and Foreign Languages, Representative Meyer, and then House Bill 447, Broadcasting, Promoting Charitable Gaming, Representative McGuire. So first, Senate Bill 260. See Brian there. Welcome. You know the drill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brian Hove, staff for Senator Seekins. This is a pretty simple little deal. We last year, as part of, I believe it was Senate Bill 230, which did a number of things with respect to workers' comp, one of which was to establish a task force. For whatever reason, we kind of got out of the blocks a little late, and so we were able to squeeze, I think, about seven meetings. Is that my recollection correct, Representative Lynn? Into a period of 3 months, which, given the subject matter, was a pretty heavy load, and really, I think we did a pretty good job in terms of the public members of the committee of the task force. We expected a lot out of them, and we got a lot. What this bill does is allows us to finish our work, gives us an extra year to complete it, and in a nutshell, I don't want to waste any more of your time, but that's about it.
Okay, any questions?
I have a comment.
Okay, then we'll get a motion to move it out.
Right, I was a co-chair of that committee. I agree. I think we did do some good work. I think a lot of work still to be done. We got out of the starting block late, as I recall, and I'll just say because the governor was late signing the bill, and so as a result, we got started late, and then everything else happened.
Sure.
But I think we did some good work. I think more work needs to be done.
Representative Guttenberg?
Yeah, I just have a question. On page 2, line 1. Shall report its findings, basically before February 15th, 06.
We had a report that was due, Representative, on December, I think it was 1st or 3rd of 05, and we obviously didn't make that deadline. And so in addition to extending this task force by a year, we also took the opportunity to just go ahead and change that date so we could slide in on our report.
So your point is, Representative Guttenberg, do we need to amend this now because we're already past that? Do you want us to amend that here to make it a little bit later?
No, we're good. We've already submitted the report.
Oh, okay. You're good. Good question.
I forgot about that.
Who did we submit it to?
Representative Crawford?
Senate. I'm sorry. Through the chair.
Who did we submit it to? The report that on February 15th?
It was submitted to the Senate Secretary, Representative.
Okay.
So do you want a copy of that?
When do we get to read that?
I can short circuit it for you and send you a copy.
Okay. I'd like to.
Representative,
I don't really mind extending this. I would like a clear idea of what we're going to get by extending it. You know, what are the goals of extending it to? What else are we going to get past this report?
Well, there are, you know, as we found out, obviously a number of stakeholders involved in the process, and everybody comes to the table with a little different point of view. We were not able to fully explore everybody's issues and to come to some sort of, we don't anticipate that everybody's going to be in agreement on every issue, but what we'd like to do is be able to flesh out some of these issues and allow people the opportunity to do that.
Before we get to your question, just in supplement to that, Brian, who's the chair of the committee?
It's co-chaired by Senator Seekins and Representative Lynn.
Mr.
Chairman, we're pretty much in concert on this. Yeah. He's right. There are a number of issues that need to be fleshed out. And my way of thinking, obviously, was I think we rushed to judgment before, so it did leave some unresolved issues. Yeah. And I think it's the only vehicle we have at the moment to explore those issues and try to come to some resolution.
My point was that I was going to say on the record it would be nice to hear from the chair. I didn't actually didn't realize that, so that's good that you're. I didn't know that you had a co-chairmanship. New to me. So that
again, it's the ad hoc committee. You know, this is maybe able to form some of those functions which we should have performed before.
But you want to cover everything, and you're saying if you try to do a report at the last second now, it's not going to work, and you need another year based on public
policy. We do, in fact, have a report. It's not as complete as I'd like to see it. Sure. I don't think it's as complete as Senator Seekins would like to see it, and certainly some of the other people on the committee. These are very serious issues. Serious issues require time. Shouldn't rush to judgment. Said it before, don't do it again.
Crawford, follow up on that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wondering how did you decide on the issues? Are they listed in this report, the issues that you're trying to flesh out? Are you going to vote on issues to include them in a final report, or how's that all supposed to work?
Well, through the chair, Representative, we have a final report. We have obviously the ability to submit another report. There's nothing that says that the task force cannot submit another report. And if that's the direction that the task force wants to go, then that's what we'll do. We felt it necessary to remain in the spirit of SB 230, which was to submit a report for the 24th legislature. Mm-hmm. And so that's what this report attempts to do.
How did you decide on the issues that were going to be reported and fleshed out? And
it was a like many of the issues that came before the task force. Everybody brought a little different piece to the mm-hmm. the puzzle, and so what was, for instance, Representative Lynn, one of Representative Lynn's priorities may not have been somebody else's, but they might have had something that they wanted, and so. Right. That's pretty much how the report came together, is to try and address the various concerns that all the members had.
Representative Crawford?
I know that when I attended some of the task force meetings, there were a number of issues that were brought up around the table, and I don't know if you addressed each one of those or if you just decided, was this arbitrarily picked by the two chairman, or how did you decide to go with the issues that you put in your report?
Well, the issues in the report, and it might be better if I can provide you a copy of the report, and then we can discuss issues if you had issues with it. But it was pretty much a consensus report, I think.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. We didn't have any real debate on what to include and not to include, or what to debate and not to debate. We pretty much reminded that, and I don't recall anybody on the committee bringing forth a concern that we didn't talk about, and I think we addressed, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we addressed it in some fashion, maybe not completely, but at least most of the issues that were brought to the table in the initial report. Some of them need to be fleshed out, but we didn't. I don't recall. I think every report is brought to the table we discussed to some degree. We maybe didn't agree, have consensus in all these things, but at least we brought them to the table, and it was pretty good work, I think.
And Brian, this wasn't just you and Representative Lynn or Senator Seekins. I mean, there was labor representative, and wasn't it a mix?
Oh, of course. Yeah.
You have the list there.
I do.
Not that this is what we're debating. I mean, the idea is just to extend this because you're looking at issues, but I guess it's relevant just so you folks know that even though you didn't get a draft report yet, I mean, it doesn't mean that things haven't gone procedurally proper.
Just briefly here, we had Dr. John Duddy from the Alaska State Medical Association representing the ASMA, Rod Bennett from the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, Michael Jensen, who is a workers' comp attorney representing employees, Trina Heikes, workers' comp attorney representing employers, Kevin Doherty, representing organized labor, Ted Quinn, representing labor that's not organized, Connie Livesey, workers' comp insurance carrier, Jamie Slack, self-insured employers, Linda Lewis, small businesses, and Everett Billingsley, large businesses. In addition, we had three members from the legislature. We had a majority Senate member, majority House member, and a minority member. In this case, it happened to be Senator Gretchen Guess.
What I'd recommend, and we can get to any other questions, but with respect to kind of the detail that you're asking Brian, this is directed to Representative Crawford, because there's this report that's out, you can certainly supplement him, all of us, I would probably like to look at that, and so you can provide that after the meeting. But my presumption is your response is the task force can't meet any further until this bill is adopted and signed, and so you're kind of on hold. And the longer it takes for this to go through, the less work you can get done. I doubt you want to keep going year after year. So I would recommend that once your questions are done, we get this out of committee and try to get it certified with the Thank you. Give Pop a hug. Okay, any other questions?
Yeah.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you for getting back to me. I attended a couple of the meetings. One of the interesting components is you had the medical community sitting around the table saying, there's a proprietary nature of a lot of the information that we had, and that another component of the medical community said the same thing. It was three or four times, and they all said they, there was concern about releasing information and about proprietary numbers, and there was a subcommittee set up to somebody to sit around and draw everybody together and make them all feel comfortable about releasing the numbers and that they could to evaluate what really is going on with workers' comp, because until you open up that that can and look at that whole package, then when you're looking at rates and numbers and it's all in the blind, it's all assumptions. So did the committee have any success doing that?
I think that what we found on the committee was that again there were a lot of different issues that worked their way into workers' comp rates, and that certainly was one of them, Representative. The short answer to your question is that the committee did not have data available to them specific to what you're talking about. Now, I will also say that given the compressed time frame, we essentially really only had 90 days to work on this. And I think that we pushed, especially the public members of the committee, I think we pushed them pretty hard in seven meetings over 90 days, because they have regular jobs that they're supposed to be doing too. So we didn't get to all this that we wanted to. What we'd like to do is have an opportunity to go back and see if we can pick up some of those pieces.
Seeing no other...
And I would welcome anybody in the legislature, especially the Labor and Commerce Committee, to give input to the task force on specific issues they'd like to have us address.
Okay. That's good advice. Representative, I knew that you'd have a comment, which I welcome. Representative Roper.
Anyway,
Spinard. Republican.
South Spinard.
Realtor.
Yeah.
Representative Ledoux has joined us as well. Okay. All rise.
Mr. Chairman, I understand you discussed the date of the February 15th, 06, and they have delivered a report. Is that correct, Mr. Representative Lynn?
There has been a report that's available for anybody who would like to look at it.
No, but you met the statutory report. I hate passing laws that makes criminal of legislators. just checking.
No comment.
But so you already did that, right?
Making
you delivered the report under the February 15th.
There is a report that has been delivered on time. It's not as complete, I don't think, as any of us would like to see it.
Yeah, I've got no problem with extending the task force, but do you want to issue another report?
Well, it seems to me, Representative, through the chair, what's the point of meeting more if we don't give more information out after we have our meetings? I think we should issue another report to close it out at whatever point we close it out, because if we don't issue a report, we're just talking to ourselves.
Yeah.
That's good, though. We like to talk to intelligent people.
A Senate bill to come over here that we didn't amend.
I beg your pardon?
Wouldn't be right if a Senate bill came over, we didn't amend it. So, yeah. We could. Yeah, what was the February 28th? Why so deep in the next session, if I could ask?
I'm sorry. Through the chair, Representative Roekberg. That's a good question. It was somewhat arbitrary, I think. The original date was February 1st, 06. I think that we gave ourselves a little extra time just to clean up any loose ends if we had them.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, I don't know if we'd be looked on as hostile if we didn't just add a, say, February 28th, 07, the next report after February 15th, 06 on line 1, page 2. So force him to have another report. I don't know, but I don't want to do anything that's hostile.
Well, we do need to amend everything that comes over.
Yeah. Any comments? Yeah. Not necessary?
Or is it necessary?
Just say yes or no, and then we'll get the bill on.
I think that, and I don't, we don't want to complicate this anything any more than what it already is. I mean, it's a pretty simple deal, and I think that the intent would be to go ahead and issue another report.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Can we have a motion? I just want to get the bill out. You're picking on Brian here. Let's roll.
Well, if you want to pick on Brian, we'll continue the discussion.
Chairman, one more question. So I apologize.
That's okay.
Representative, was there not, during the SB 130, an establishment of another medical committee?
Through the chair, I'm not involved with the medical.
No, I know, but wasn't there another committee? Or?
There is another
committee we need to.
Did they ever do
anything? Medical review task force, review committee.
I can address that if you.
Sure.
Through the chair, there is a medical services review committee. They did issue a report to the workers' comp task force, which is attached to our report as an addendum.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You bet. Okay, Representative Lynn, moving Senate Bill 260.
Yes, I would move Senate Bill 260-24-LS-1583/G. No fiscal note, I don't believe.
Individual recommendation.
And individual recommendation.
Seeing, hearing, no objection, so moved. Thanks, Fran.
Thank
Senator
you.
Senator Seekins, hello for us. So House Bill 394 is next. I think we can expedite this meeting fairly quick.
Hopefully. You want a motion to move the bill, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, already did. He just did. So House Bill
394.
Not
that one, the next.
Yeah, Alan, good point. Are you guys ready? That'd
no,
be great.
We got a blank CS. Yeah.
Norman will never allow that.
No, there's a blank CS, Mr. Chairman.
Oh, that's true. Okay, then I will move that we adopt the blank CS. What's the version?
F.
Version F to come before the committee. Mike, do you want to real quick just...
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Michael Pulowski, and I'm an aide to Representative Meyer. Though over 80,000 Alaskans speak a language other than English at home, there is no provision in state law that facilitates a company issuing a policy or associated materials in a language other than English. What blank committee substitute for House Bill number 394 does is clarify that when materials are issued or a policy form is filed with the division, the English version is the official version and requires that the companies disclose that fact in the materials that are given to the public. It's a cleanup bill that facilitates better service to the more than 80,000 Alaskans that are out there that are subject to buy insurance. With that, Mr. Chairman, I can answer questions on the blank CS or any further comments the committee would have.
Any questions from the committee?
Yeah.
Representative Guttenberg?
The differences between the original version and the blank and the CS?
Absolutely, Mr. Chairman. Representative Guttenberg, through the chair. The first two are general changes, and it's changing insurance policy or form to insurance policy form, which is a term of art in the industry. The second is changing foreign language to non-English, and that's just for clarity, not impugning that something might be a foreign language. To Section 1A, we deleted associated materials from A because the Division of Insurance does not need to review associated materials, which is your advertising, your brochures, any material that might be related to the policy form, and deleted an insurer may file because an insurer already may file with the department. So we left it to the director may approve an insurance policy form in a language other than English if the insurance policy form and those provisions were the same as the first version. To B, we added the disclosures that you see on page 1, 9, and 10. Because we included in B now the associated materials, and this is the section that deals with what goes to the public. And then to Section 1C, we removed the specific reference to AS 2990-020, which is the law of general violation for the title, and that was because we felt that it was too exclusive and rather made it a blanket prohibition against misrepresenting information to the public. And then we added a new Section 1D, which defined associated material, since it was distinguished from A to B.
Follow-up, Representative Guttenberg, then Roper, then Ledoux.
When you're talking about an association, insurer may not note and only represent information in the language, in a language other than English. You haven't changed the violations at all. It's just, everything is the same violations, whether it's in English or.
Through the chair, Representative Guttenberg, yes. And in fact, we felt that if you linked it specifically to the general violation, you would perhaps create some lack of clarity between the other false advertising provisions of Title 21, and we didn't want to do that.
Okay, Representative Roper, then Ledoux.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why are we doing this?
Through the chair, Representative Roper, the general reason is the same reason that it would be confusing to have the original version and the CS without choosing which is the version.
Now, why are we doing this bill?
Is that...
He was giving a hypothetical.
A hypothetical. Is that right now without...
My German and Norwegian friend.
Representative Roper, through the chair, it's essentially without the designation of an official version. If a dispute were to arise, then a company would be unwilling to issue a policy in another language in case that was the official version for a dispute settlement. You need one version that everybody can work off of for a dispute.
Did the Division of Insurance request this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Roper, I can't say exactly if they requested it, but I believe they support it, and they're here to testify as well.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know. It happened to be English is the primary language of this country, and I'm not sure that I understand this. Looks like you can file multiple. How much paperwork is this going to require in the Division of Insurance if we have to publish 80 different versions of an insurance policy? They got to keep every policy around?
Well, Mike can't answer that. We'll get to the Division of Insurance next from your question. I know Representative Ledoux has quite a few Filipino communities, so it'd be interesting to hear your perspective, since I'm sure they would appreciate the
Do. I'm just sort of curious. This does not mandate an insurance company to write a policy in a language other than English.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that is absolutely correct.
So that just allows them to do it in the course of the free enterprise system. If they want to market to Filipinos or Hispanics or Laotians or any other non-English speaking group.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, that's correct. In fact, the lack of a provision in current law is actually an obstacle to that business practice right now, which is the reason for the bill.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Ledoux.
So do you know whether or not right now there are without this bill, are there any insurance policies in other languages floating around here?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I do not, but I believe Division of Insurance can answer that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay, no other questions? And Mike, you stand by. We'll get to Jeff from the Division of Insurance, Deputy Director. Come up, and I know we have Sheldon Winters from State Farm here, and then I assume Jeff and Mark are here for the other bill.
Okay, good. All right. Mr. Chairman, my name is Jeffrey Trout. I'm Deputy Director of the Division of Insurance. I've come just basically say that the division does support this legislation. We didn't initiate it, but we do think it's a good idea. We see it as a consumer protection and a consumer education issue. And then I can go through the statistics about how many people speak Spanish or Tagalog or what lag, but it's probably unnecessary. I guess I can sum up the reason for support is just if these things are hard enough to understand, if your native language is English, and there are people who it's not their native language. Their kids may speak English, and that's pretty common. But the people buying the policy don't necessarily understand it. So we think it would be helpful for consumer education. We also think it's helpful to have an anchor, that the English version is sort of the anchor. Two things. First of all, it's impossible to accurately translate one language into another. There's always going to be little differences. That's why you go to the. So that's why there's 20 versions of the Bible out there, because there are differences that can be considered significant. I don't know that the courts are necessarily equipped to interpret a Spanish. Alaska courts generally are all that equipped to interpret a Spanish language, a Tagalog or Korean document. If I can sort of anticipate questions, if that's all right.
Well, the one question from Representative Roper talked about how much paperwork will this cause on the division. Would it be a nightmare, or would it actually be like Representative Ledoux said, by choice and not?
Okay, through the chair, and I guess to Representative Ledoux and Representative Roper. I don't think it would create a nightmare. And this is one of the things, although we do support it, I have to tell you, we did some research before I came over. I believe we have two policies that have actually, and I believe they're Spanish health insurance policies. So it's not, it's probably something that's more likely to occur in the future, but at the moment, I don't think it would take a lot of...
No
fiscal effect.
Okay, Representative Roper, follow up from that?
Not right now.
Okay. Well, then we'll go next to Sheldon Winters. Thanks. I'm just going to rock and roll, folks. I mean, if you have questions, great, but there's no need to sit here for 2 hours. Hi.
Hello. My name is Sheldon Winters. I'm a lobbyist for State Farm. Thanks for your time. I'll try to be brief and maybe direct my questions to my testimony to Representative Roper's questions. The bottom line is, Mr. Pulaski stated, there's an emerging group of consumers out there that speak foreign languages, and we want to provide them some information about insurance products. And to do that, we have to give them some information in their foreign language. It helps the consumer, and it certainly helps the industry companies that want to tap into that market. But the problem is, if we do that, we're concerned about the interpretation that the foreign language materials may have. And if I may, I will be very brief, but I'll just go through the two sections of this bill that I think will explain why we're doing what we want to do here. Of course, Section A applies to insurance policy forms, those things that you file with the division.
Page 1, line 7.
Exactly. Your policy form, your endorsement, anything that has to be filed with the Division of Insurance. And this just simply clarifies that if an insurer wants to give a foreign language translation, provided these conditions are met, then as stated in B, the English version will control any interpretation. Now, I got to be frank with you. I don't believe that after this bill passes, State Farm is going to run out and file a bunch of foreign language insurance policies. But Section A gives some guidance to what is really our concern, our more primary concern, and that is the associated materials. We do want to provide brochures, informational sheets that will explain these policies and explain them in a foreign language. But we are somewhat reluctant and inhibited by Supreme Court precedents in Alaska and basically everywhere else in the country that basically says, in determining and looking at a insurance contract dispute, the court is not only going to look at the insurance policy itself, those things in Section A, but also look at any other relevant evidence. And this has always meant brochures, informational sheets, et cetera. Now, we have to live with that, but what the industry wants to do is basically say, okay, we want to give this information in a foreign language or a foreign translation with the English version and just direct the court that if there is a dispute and if the court does say we're going to include the brochure as part of your contract, that the English version controls. So that's really the purpose behind this, is to let us go out and do some things, give some information out there and not have it held against us.
So, Sheldon, the presumption is that the majority or all of the, I know you can't speak for them, but like the Allstates and the Geicos and all of those, I mean, this is an incentive for them to get more business and to help with those who can't speak English and insure them. I mean, so you think it's positive for the industry as a whole, as well as State Farm?
Mr. Chairman, exactly it is. I believe that you will see a lot more of this information going out there with this law. I know we will be doing it.
Yeah, that's good. I represent East Anchorage, and we have probably a fifth or sixth, foreign.
This is a burgeoning market.
Yeah, for sure. Any other questions before we move the bill? Representative Roper.
Well, I was concerned about, and should have asked Mr. Trout about Mr. Winter says that you have to file each one of these policies with the division. They would have to keep every policy. So if you have a multitude of different languages, you'd have to file them with the Division of Insurance. Is that right, Mr. Winter?
With respect to the policy itself, yes, that's what this provides. I don't through the chair, I don't believe that you're going to see a whole heck of a lot of that in the immediate future. It just provides some guidance there.
Isn't this the beginning of it? This is kind of the seminal attempt, and then if it becomes a conflagration, a ton of them, then we'd probably come back next year and say, okay, now we need some regulatory sideboards, but this is kind of the model.
Yeah. And I should add that, and Mr. Trout can correct me if I'm wrong, there are a couple instances where people or insurers have filed forms, and there is no direction as to which version controls, and I believe the Division of Insurance staff have somewhat assumed that the foreign language version would control. So this sets that precedence and clarifies that issue.
Representative Ledoux?
Do you anticipate in actuality that it would be in Spanish that you'd be filing most of the policies as opposed to the other languages?
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I actually don't anticipate, at least with State Farm, that they will actually begin going out and actually filing policies with the division. It's more of the brochures, and the brochures I have seen are in Spanish, Chinese. There's probably 8 or 9 different versions out there, and just what the market is out there. Spanish is obviously the big one.
So in other words, you would market it through the brochures in Spanish and Chinese and whatever, but then the insurance policy would only be written in English?
Through the chair, that is one example. And the only thing that in that instance that takes place is if a court says, in a contract dispute with an insured, if a court says, you read this brochure, you gave it to the consumer, and we're going to hold you to the terms of that brochure, then we know the English half of the brochure is the controlling language, not the Spanish version.
Okay.
Representative Roper?
You don't have to file associated materials though with the division.
No.
It's the same policy.
Yeah. Exactly.
And if there's a dispute and someone says, wait a minute, it's the same policy, but you're misinterpreting Hispanic versus English, then the English controls.
That is correct.
So you're safe either way. That makes sense. Good. If we, Representative Ledoux, do you want to make the motion to move?
Sure.
It should be 394.
I'll move CS for House Bill number 394 with a zero fiscal note and accompanying recommendations.
Perfect. Any objection?
Yeah, object.
Okay,
purpose object. Of discussion.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, I'm a little concerned about this. I understand that the business community wants this for marketing purposes, but also to make sure there's a clarity of regulatory control here. That makes some sense. But I guess I was in the legislature 10 years ago when the constitutional amendment for English as the primary language or whatever the term of art was. I guess I'm growing more concerned by the day that the American culture be strengthened by a common language and method of communication, and that's I believe that the diversity of language is minical to the American way of life, quite frankly, particularly as exhibited by the huge amount of immigration that we have that's not controlled now.
And I would just respond, I appreciate
well, I think
the words.
Other people may object to that, but I think it's a point of view that demands some debate, and I'm not going to object to the bill moving, but I just wanted to put that on the record.
And we have folks, I'll get to Representative Ledoux and Representative Lynn. I would just say I understand your view with English versus other languages in terms of keeping one central language, but one, we're a melting pot, and so we're obviously getting a lot of diversity, and we celebrate
well, we
that with the bill.
Pot. We're not melting anymore.
Well, maybe so, but the other thing I'd say is I think you would change your viewpoint if you were in Anchorage and got hit by someone who said, hey, I don't have insurance, and the main reason is, in their language they're saying this, I didn't understand the policy, and you killed Representative Meyer's bill, and if you would have supported it, I would have got language to Mr. Winter's company, State Farm, and thanks for nothing. I'm not going to sign up at your gym now.
Mr. Chairman, I think the amazing thing about this bill is that I would like to read, beside anybody who's a member of the bar, who has ever read their insurance policy, I don't care what language it's in, Thank you very much.
Okay, Representative Ledoux.
Two comments. I mean, you're right about the insurance policy, and I guess that's the reason why you're only going to do the brochures in the foreign language, because nobody reads their insurance policy, but they do sometimes read the brochures. Secondly, I guess I'm somewhat surprised about your comments, because you're always for free enterprise, and this is free enterprise. This is what the insurance companies want to do. There's a market there, and to say that we shouldn't let the insurance companies market to this growing group of people, I mean, that would be economically suicidal.
Mr. Chairman?
Wait, Josh, could you please get the American flag while Representative Ledoux speaks and wave it behind her?
Mr. Chairman, given that great eloquence and that wonderful exposition that Representative Ledoux has changed my mind, and I withdraw my objection.
I love it. Okay, before we get to Representative Lynn, just so you know, an insurer may file and the director may approve an insurance policy form or material in the other language. So it's not just the brochure. I mean, or what's the point? We're going to, you know, market at State Farm. Please come get an English policy that you won't be able to read, but we're soliciting it in Russian. I mean, it's the policy, too. But if there's a dispute, it's in English. Representative Lynn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I find it very difficult to top the previous two people on on the committee. I'm eloquent in my own way, but I agree, you know, English should be the official language, but this uses the English language for the official one that's being used by the court and by the agency there, and I think it's really a consumer protection thing. While we're teaching everybody to speak English as we should, we still have people insured and have some clue what would they buy. It's consumer protection and free enterprise and everything else good.
Well, that's good. Okay, so the objection removed, the bill passes. Thank you for being in the scrutiny and the gauntlet. And by the way, Representative Meyer, we need more bills. We have one or two literally every day in this committee. We need more.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Roper.
Actually, I heard some comments from the finance co-chair about the problems with moving some of his legislation. I can't keep up with it.
Yeah.
Okay, the next bill is Representative McGuire's bill, and Craig and Kevin will be presenting it. Okay, two down, one to go.
You could just vote now and be done.
That's right.
No. I was afraid of that. For the record, my name is Craig Johnson. I'm staff to Representative Lisa McGuire. Before you today is a bill that, although it has gaming in the title, what we're really talking about is a fairness bill. This bill will allow broadcasters, radio and television, to basically have the same rights that newspaper has today, and that is the ability to carry certain charitable gaming activities over the air. I have today with us online, we have Rick Schmidt, who is the president of the Alaska Broadcast Association, who can answer any questions from a broadcasting perspective. I think Jeff Prather is here from the administration to answer any questions. And we also have in the room, if you need live meat, is the former mayor of Juneau, Dennis Egan, who is also a broadcaster of a local radio station. Right now, if your charity organization or your service club wanted to go to a radio station or TV station and say, we're raising money to send our kids to on a hockey camp, the radio TV stations, although they provide a tremendous amount of public service, could not give you that ad because that would be a lottery and that would be illegal under the Alaskan law. We're one of only two states left in the nation, or a few states, I'll say Utah and Alaska are the only two that don't allow this. It is, it's been ruled as constitutional by the federal government. The FCC says it's legal. But we're kind of holdouts that are preventing broadcasting from having the same footing as the print media. So this is, once again, a fairness bill, not a gaming bill. It does nothing to expand any type of gaming. It is basically just the opportunity for people to get their message out in radio and television. And with that, I have people that can answer questions or comments or whatever you'd like.
Craig, just before we get into any dialogue here, this is Chairman Anderson. So delineate what you're saying is currently, and I know the answer, but I want to get this on the record. Currently, we can have the, the Nanana Ice Classic, or we could have the Kenai River Sport Fishing Classic.
and there can be an ad on the radio that says, come on down, compete in the classic, get the biggest fish, guess and buy a ticket and guess when the ice is going to break. But you couldn't say, hey, come on down to the Girl Scouts raffle. We're having a raffle, buy a ticket, and you may get a cake, a trip or something. Come on down to the Special Olympics raffle and auction. Come on down to the Lasky Youth Theater. I'm thinking of all the boards I'm on. Can't do that. But you could do like the Nenana Ice Classic or the Kenai Fishing.
I think,
and your point is you just want to be all inclusive of the different charities that have these.
Mr. Chair, I think if the Girl Scouts were to call their raffle a classic, they could probably advertise. So there's a lot of unfairness and inequity. A classic example that I have, I'm a member of a Rotary Club, and I don't know if you're familiar with Rotary, but Rotary is basically credited with stamping out polio in the world. There are only two countries left with where polio, and it's the goal of Rotary by 2010 to stamp out polio. We have
$5 fine for not wearing a pin, by the way. You're bringing up Rotary and he doesn't have a pin on.
Excellent. But we give away snow machines. We do a raffle for snow machines. We cannot advertise on the radio, even regardless how good the choice is. We can't say, when you see a guy at the sportsman show this weekend, buy a $5 ticket for a chance to win a snow machine. We can't do that, even though most of the TV and radio stations would actually give us that ad as a public service announcement because we would qualify. They can't do that. And so that's the kind of inequity, not only the operators that, the problems we're about to discuss, I know are about to come up, but it is the Girl Scouts, it is the Rotary, it is those service organizations.
Okay, first, because of expertise or not, do you want to, as we get to questions, go to someone else that can answer, or do you mind them asking questions to you first? Always say.
I would certainly answer questions, but I also would like to reserve the right to call an expert. I have been in broadcasting, so I do know a little bit about that.
Okay.
But
well,
not,
then we'll
not
go
not.
To Representative Ledoux, and then Representative Crawford, then Representative Roekberg, and Representative Lynn.
Do you think the current prohibition is something that maybe not all broadcasters are necessarily aware of? Because I could swear I've heard radio ads for raffles and for lotteries.
Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, I would hesitate to think that they're not aware of it. There may be those that choose not to recognize it. The FCC, the licensing process for radio stations is quite extensive, and for someone to go against a state law jeopardizes their license, which is their livelihood. I would think that what you may be hearing is, for example, the Rat Race Classic, which is because of a loophole in the statute we passed last year on rat races. Now there's a rat race going on in Anchorage. And once again, if you called it a classic, you could probably get by with advertising it on the line, borderline. There are some broadcasters that won't take that type of advertising because they don't want to take the chance because the law is fairly clear. Others might want to go up and look at it and look over the line, and that's true with any business, I think. So.
Mm-hmm. He's really a gerbil, by the way. It's a she, right?
It's a gerbil, not a rat.
Friendly critter.
Yeah.
Okay, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you've heard, but I have a problem with expanding gambling as a general rule, and I've read this bill several times, and I'm not sure that it says in the bill the way that the sponsor statement portrays it. I've looked at this several times, and in the on line four it says may not use broadcasting to promote or conduct a charitable gaming activity. Why would you want to have conduct a gaming activity over the airwaves? I thought that what you're talking about is promoting a Girl Scouts charitable activity, and that, I mean, also, is this, could this be for pay, or is this only for public service announcements? And if it is for only public service announcements, where would it say that in this bill?
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, I don't think that it is only and if I misstated as only public service announcement, that would have been an error on my part. That includes public service announcements. Certainly, if someone wanted to purchase advertising, that's not precluded in this bill. So I'm not saying that it's only for public service. In terms of conducting a lottery, I am thinking that, or some type of gaming activity, I think that you'd probably look at something like if you were a broadcaster and you required someone to come to a place to register to win, that's a lottery, and they can't advertise that. They can't promote that that way. That's why if you listen to radio giveaways and the type of promotions they do to get listeners, it requires prize consideration and chance. I think it would probably allow them to, and Rick Schmidt online with the Alaska Broadcast Association is much more familiar with that, could maybe be able to answer that question.
And
better.
I'll answer it for you, Representative Crawford. If you read the first line four, a person may not use broadcasting to promote or conduct a charitable gaming activity, except that you can broadcast a fish derby or type of classic defined in AS 515-690, or radio or television broadcasting to promote, and they want to add raffle and lottery. The reason conduct is in there is so that you can't have a lottery. You can't say, okay, we're having Powerball here, and they're not changing that. I mean, that's, I assume that's what you want. You don't want Powerball. So this, you keep it the way it is. Conduct's already in the current language.
I just didn't want to have conduct as...
I mean, you want
what we're allowing.
You're going to have lotteries.
It says, it may not use conduct. So,
And it only adds broadcasting, not conducting or promoting. Right. I mean, it doesn't say conducting.
But I'm concerned here about raffle and lottery. You know, that doesn't keep it down to, you know, just charitable lotteries or charitable raffles. And I don't want to make any loopholes where we might have the ability to start advertising.
You mean through this bill passage, you're saying suddenly then Powerball comes in and says, wait, House Bill 447 allowed us to do lotteries because it referenced us as a broadcasting. And I guess Jeff would be able to answer that. I don't think that would just because if this bill passed, I don't think we could have lotteries. He's not up at the stand.
Mr. Chairman, I would think that is not the intent.
And that wasn't the idea.
Is there a lottery? Is it illegal under Alaska statute, or what's their definition?
We'll have the divisions.
And that was, Mr. Chairman, that was my next question. Is everything still has to be legal?
That's a good question, though.
Yeah. So you can't, this doesn't broaden anything, and it doesn't make anything legal that's not. It just allows you to advertise what is legal.
But what's legal today and what might be legal tomorrow? If we don't specify what kind of lottery or activity.
Jeff, you want to? Is this a good time for you to come up? Sorry.
Bring Powerball into the mix.
Yeah. Why don't we have Jeff?
It may say we can start advertising Powerball on TV, and that's not, or on the radio. And
we'll have Jeff Prather come up.
Much prefer to have this limited to public service announcements, not for profit advertising. That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah. You might be able to, you know the drill, to state your name for the record and title over at Revenue.
My name's Jeff Prather. I'm the supervisor of the gaming unit in the Department of Revenue.
And question would be, you have the bill, with your interpretation, do you think that, there it is, if you can see there where it says conduct. He has the bill in front of him. Do you understand Representative Crawford's concern? He doesn't want to see this in any level as a loophole or mechanism through which, like a lot, Powerball could say, hey, as a result of this bill passage, now we can promote a lottery. And I don't personally view it as that. Just because you promote a lottery doesn't mean Powerball is enabled now to come to Alaska. How do you interpret the bill in terms of any potential of expanding gaming?
We don't see the bill expanding gaming. It only allows the addition of raffles to the types of activities that can be promoted over the internet and promoted by advertising. We would say selling tickets or drawing tickets would be conducting an activity, and that's prohibited by this statute.
Representative Crawford? So he thinks it would only be selling tickets or advertising the sales of tickets for raffle or lottery. But it doesn't expand any.
What kind of raffle and lottery? Do, I mean, we don't limit in this bill what sort of raffle or lottery. If at some point we make Powerball or any other type of lottery legal, you know, it would mean that we could start advertising it on TV, and that's certainly something that I'm absolutely opposed to.
Through the chair, Representative Crawford, raffle and lottery have the same definition in our statute.
Okay.
And that definition means the selling of rights to participate and the awarding of prizes in a game of chance conducted by the drawing for prizes by lot.
Is Powerball part of that?
No. Powerball would require gambling machines, which have to be authorized under statute 0515180. They have to be approved by the department. So.
Well, maybe I've got it wrong. I was talking about the thing that you see on TV down in the lower 48 on Wednesday nights and Saturday nights where they...
You mean the fun game worth a low investment where you can make millions and pay for your sick family's medical
that's
insurance.
The
fun game Powerball, that's what he's referring to.
The one that just took $365 million out of the economy.
Representative Crawford, we don't see this bill authorizing lotteries in that sense.
And how do we know that?
Well, our regulations pretty much lay out what a raffle is or a lottery, and it's a drawing by lot from a container with tickets, a drawing of tickets by lot.
Uh-huh. And the one on TV would be outlawed so that you couldn't?
The one on TV would require the approval of the department. Section 0515880 states that this chapter does not authorize the use of playing cards, dice, roulette wheels, coin-operated instruments or machines, or other objects or instruments used, designed, or intended primarily for gaming or gambling, or any other method or implement not expressly authorized by the department.
Well, let me ask a question, because I haven't talked to Liesl about this ever, to be honest. I never even read the bill until now. What if we struck lottery? I mean, was that put in because it's necessary based on the definition in the statute, or can we just knock those two out if he has a concern?
Mr. Chairman, yeah. I don't know why lottery was included in this definition.
Is there a rationale?
Been there.
Thank you, Jeff. Before we get to Representative Ledoux, Craig, is there a rationale for it? Can you repeat who?
Mr. Chairman, this actually bill has been introduced at the request of the Alaska Broadcast Association.
Okay, so
and
it is.
So it is from the broadcaster.
See, it wasn't language. Even from a gaming entity.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to keep from, opening this up so that somewhere down the road, we don't do something that we didn't intend to, much like the rap classic over at Tudor Road Bingo.
In all I'm responding, Representative Crawford, is you should care in the context of who pushed the bill. I mean, it's not a charitable gaming. At least you know it's a neutral figure that just wants to be able to advertise. But we'll get to questions to him because he's the gentleman that asked them to sponsor the bill.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, we'll go in order.
I have clarity here. In the statute there, sub 38, raffle and lottery, quote unquote, means the selling of rights to participate and awarding of prizes in a game of chance conducted by the drawing for prizes by lot, as was printed.
So they just extracted
so
it from the statute, the vernacular.
Yeah. I can't hear both of y'all.
Okay.
It's unfortunately how it's defined. Mm-hmm. Raffle and lottery is a term of art under our statute, unfortunately.
Okay. That would be fine. I think the main thing is to keep this to PSAs, because then we're going to get to the people that you want to get to, like the Girl Scouts and charitable organizations, and we don't go to for-profit type gambling that would preclude us from getting to the rat races and all of those things as long as we stayed to PSAs.
What we'll do, and just before we get, just because I'm going to go in order. So it was Representative Roekberg, then Representative Ledoux, then what I think would be fair, then Representative Guttenberg. But before, out of courtesy, before you guys ask a question to either of these two, don't you think it would be a good idea to listen to the person who asked him, to Representative McGuire, to sponsor the bill? Mm-hmm. So can we maybe hold off questions just till he testifies? Stuart, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Is it Stuart? No. Oh, I'm Rick Stewart. I'll get to you second. Rick Schmidt, are you online?
Yes, I hope I am. The green light's on.
Yep. Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Okay, Rick. Turn down the volume there. Can you answer a question on the impetus behind the bill and why you asked Representative McGuire to do this? And you know, we've heard clarification just as a preface before you speak that from the Department of Revenue, Jeff, that. This does not in any way change or expand gambling or gaming in Alaska. All it does is take the vernacular that's currently in statute, which is raffle and lottery. I mean, I'm sure the drafter picked that because that's how it's defined in state statute, and Jeff just confirmed that. And isn't it correct that all this does is allow for broadcasting the promotion of basically a raffle because we don't have lotteries in the state? Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. The promotion of a raffle and lottery comes from that, in parentheses, 38 part of the statute as definitions go. And it's strictly for the purpose of evening the playing field between us and print currently in our market. And why don't I back up here? My name is Rick Schmidt, and I'm the president of the Alaska Broadcasters Association. And we have almost 100 TV and radio stations across Alaska, and I'm a broadcaster. I'm the general manager of radio station KNOM in Nome, Alaska, and I want to thank you very much for considering this today, Mr. Chair and committee members. Yes, it's to even out. Being here in Nome, this is a very personal. It's very personal to me. I'm on Rotary also, and I apologize. I'm not wearing my pin right now, but it's. I'm in Rotary, and we cannot promote our duck race on the air to benefit scholarships, to benefit JROTC or any of these events. But what became personal for me, can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
You're very
I'm a broadcaster, so I tend to go on and on without checking in here. But the VFW approached me years back, and all they needed was some funds. They were short of funds. And they asked if we could, they were going to basically raffle off an Afghan or a needlepoint or something like that. And I had to turn them away and say no. And that's when it really hit me hard because the next month as treasurer of Rotary, I needed to publicize our duck race. And what I had to do is go down to the local paper, which comes out once a week, and buy some advertising for this event, which we do. And not be able to go back to my radio station, promote it, and hope like heck that the people got out to sell the tickets so we could get enough money to raise our community funds for these scholarships. And at times we have come up short, and it's really maddening to know that I could push a button and to get interest that way on a community-oriented, what you would call a raffle and a lottery, something where the funds are spent in the community. The prize money is distributed in the community, and the benefits are for the community. And that was my original impetus in going into this and just basically living it. In other words, seeing that there was not an even field between broadcasting and the print media.
It's funny.
We're both media, yet we both are held to a different standard. Now, I'm not saying we wouldn't still go and pay for an ad in the paper. This editor is a fine editor, and she's inundated by all kinds of people needing space for their good events and all, and she can't give it to everybody. But I know, were this to pass, that we in broadcasting across the state of Alaska could respond to the VFW, to the Girl Scouts, to the Boys and Girls Club, and to people who came to us and needed that kind of help. Some of you sit on these boards. Many broadcasters sit on boards across the state of Alaska. We donate generally. The broadcasting entities donate $25 million in airtime and raise $4.5 million and volunteer thousands of hours. You donate and you volunteer, you do the same thing. This would allow us another powerful tool to be able to do the good work for community service for the state of Alaska.
And this is Tom Anderson, Rick. Chair Anderson, so when Representative Crawford has the fear that maybe this is an expansion, I hope he understands it's not. I don't know what more we can say when the Division of Gaming or when the Department of Revenue's spokesman says it doesn't. And you've confirmed that that wasn't the impetus behind this. It's simply to help nonprofits and charities. The next question would be, Harry made a good point. He says, I want it to be public service announcements, PSAs. I mean, won't that be generally the format it is on TV?
Yes, it is. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, that's it. That's the question.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and committee members. Yep, that's exactly right. Public service, and this is basically spoken by people in radio and TV across the state, public service for raffles and lotteries. And I personally am against these Powerball lotteries and these kinds of things. To me, though, the way to keep this at bay is not only a legislature committed to it, but local communities that are committed to whatever happens as far as these kinds of fundraising activities and keep it community-based. And a strong community base can be benefited greatly by this change, where you can get TV and radio broadcasters that are live and local to be able to promote these kinds of operations in a responsible manner. So folks like the VFW and the Boys and Girls Club, Girl Scouts, you name it, can benefit. That's the sole intent.
Okay, Representative Crawford.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll try and make this as clear as I can. I'm not saying that this bill, that the intent was to expand gambling. What I'm saying is it may have unintentional consequences by opening up an avenue like we have with the rat race and the Tudor Road Bingo. What I was trying to get to was just going to a public service announcement format so that it wasn't for profit. I believe that would keep it from ever being abused, as long as station managers and such were able to say, you know, that's a public service and that's not. So would you have qualms about us limiting this to public service announcements?
Committee Member Crawford, through the chair, I personally would not. The part that's an equal playing field with newspapers kind of rubs against that. If newspapers could only take this type of advertising as non-commercial, non-profit, and free, then yeah, I would say let's just go for it. That sounds fine. But again, part of this is to try to get the even playing field. Most of it is obviously to promote organizations so they can go about their business.
So if we made an amendment to say that the only way that newspapers or print media could promote this gaming was by public service announcements, then that would be okay. It would be a level playing field.
That would be somewhat level, but I guess me personally here, I'd be concerned because I'd still like to be able to have the opportunity to advertise the way I want to advertise in my local paper, the Rotary Duck Race. So that's, it becomes a bit of a choice situation. I would like to be able to have the option and the choice to be able to do something like that. Same as if I was able to put something together that might make some sense on broadcast television in Anchorage to be able to promote. Say we have the Special Olympics is coming to Anchorage, and what we're going to do is we're going to put some kind of a special program together. I would like to be able to go and be able to possibly purchase some time as I would purchase probably some newspaper space. I would like to have the option to do that. That obviously would not be my first choice when I was going out to find support for it. I think you'd find within the broadcasting community we have plenty of will to be able to promote these things for free. But I think just on the kind of the First Amendment kind of, like, I'd like to be able to have the freedom to do that to be able to buy an ad.
So the duck race that you have presently, you're not able to call it a classic like the Nanana Ice Classic or any of the other things that are advertised presently, because those, that sort of thing, I mean, that's the reason why the Rat Classic over at the Tudor Road Bingo is now advertised on TV, is because that's already legal.
Yeah, I think you can apply for special classic, and I took a look at all the classics and fish derbies that are set up, and it looks like we're letting this camel in the door kind of a quarter inch at a time, and then within 100 or 200 years, we're going to be where we're at trying to get at today, because by that time, everything would have been called a classic. It's, I think with this plan to promote these raffles and lotteries for nonprofit organizations, the way it's set out here, we can kind of be on equal terms and fair with the folks that might have some financial or other kinds of connections to be able to get their classic or their fish derby in. This puts everybody on the same line. And basically, if you were to pass this today, then I could turn to the Girl Scouts who are needing money desperately for an upgrade for their camp just outside of town here and say, you know, here's an opportunity that we can go and we can do something community-based to be able to support you.
So, yeah, the public service announcement would certainly give you the ability to help the Girl Scouts out, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Roepberg, you really want to bring that up? Go ahead.
I don't really want to bring it up. But
go ahead.
Mr. Schmidt, you indicated the your duck race is, look through the statute, doesn't, under what authority, I hate to use the word, are you using? You just alluded to it. I'm not sure, Mr. Prather, perhaps you can clarify this.
Representative Roepberg, a rubber ducky race is considered a special draw raffle.
Oh, it is. That's what it's considered. Okay.
Rick, a rubber ducky race is considered a
race, not a real ducky race.
Are there any questions on rubber ducky races? Okay, hearing none.
We bring the race into this.
I'm sorry. I should have. I apologize. It's been a long day. Anyway, the numbers are put on the ducks. They're dumped in the river. The first ducks that hit.
Rick, he understands.
Right.
Rick, I'm sorry. Right.
I'm clear of whether you were operating legally, but if they're rubber, you're okay. If they were for real, you would be in trouble.
Right.
Okay.
We collect them afterwards. We don't pollute.
Okay. Good. So we'll go next to Ketchikan. Stuart, you're the wrap-up here, KFMJ.
Thank you very much. I have a prepared statement to sort of organize my thoughts for our station, and I also have some comments regarding a couple of the nonprofit groups that I belong to, if that works.
Okay, if you could be fairly concise, and this is by no means your fault, but we need to adjourn fairly soon because we're after 5. But go ahead, Stuart.
Let me start then here. It has been argued that the passage of HB 447 could lead the way to legalize gambling in Alaska. Nothing is further from the truth. HB 447 will enable over-the-air broadcasters to advertise activities that already are legal. It does not seek to further the cause of those intent on making other forms of gambling legal in the state. Please do not let this false argument confuse the facts. Alaska Statute 05.15.640A bans radio and television stations from advertising lawful charitable gaming or conduct while newspapers are not banned. It may well deny broadcasters equal protection under the federal and state constitutions, since the act prohibits without rational basis the broadcast media from engaging in conduct that is allowed by the print media. HB 447 is legislation that should have happened years ago to fix the problems associated with Alaska Statute 05.15.640A, problems that have plagued all Alaska broadcasters, public and private, urban and rural, radio and television. HB 447 will allow for a level playing field for Alaska's broadcasters. Currently, Alaska broadcasters are prohibited from airing ads regarding charitable gaming activities such as raffles and lotteries. Alaska newspapers are able to run these advertisements. Not only does this cause an unfair situation, it is also very confusing to potential advertisers who do not know such a discrepancy exists. Radio and television staffs and their management are left to try and explain the validity of this statute that they often don't fully understand. Potential advertisers come away from the exchange feeling misled, bamboozled, or outright lied to. The disgruntled advertiser then speaks his or her mind to virtually anyone who will listen, thereby casting the offending station in a poor light. Especially in small towns, word travels fast, and stations are left to suffer the repercussions for upholding the law. And this scenario played out at our radio station a few years ago, and the person who was told we couldn't advertise her raffle, especially since the newspaper and one underwear radio station were advertising it, still harbors resentment today. And this is a particularly bad situation in this case because this individual has ties to many nonprofits in our community and has told many people that we refuse to run her ads despite being told by the sales manager, production director, and general manager that we were trying to stay above board. Well-meaning people just trying to raise much-needed money for their nonprofits are generally disappointed but understanding when we explain why we can't talk about their raffles and other games of chance on the radio. They have other means of fundraising that we can talk about, spaghetti feeds, candy sales, auctions, but for some nonprofits, a raffle is the single or biggest fundraiser of the year. And it has been estimated by some that if allowed to harness the power of radio, their raffle ticket sales may triple. For a community-based nonprofit organization often operating on a shoestring to begin with, this could mean the difference between growth and stagnation or between success and failure. We in broadcasting believe strongly in the power and reach of our media to not be able to use these traits to the betterment of nonprofits in our community, nonprofits that often add immeasurably to the color, fabric, and quality of life of our communities is nearly unconscionable. The very mandate put forth to us by the FCC is that we operate in the public interest. Not coming to the aid of this facet of the public is in direct opposition to this mandate.
I'll ask.
And that was a mouthful, I must say. And then in regards to a couple of the boards that I work on, I am involved with Alaskan Cebucon, which is the local chapter of a larger organization. And we get fundraising through pull tabs, and we've also done raffles in the past, and it's something that we have not been able to really advertise on the radio. And then for the Greater Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce Events Committee, they do their one big fundraiser a year is the Enchanted Forest Auction and Dance, and one of the things that they have during that is a raffle to give away airline tickets or some other large type of prize, and it's used as fundraising for the chamber so they can continue to facilitate things in the business community. And it's the one we can advertise every aspect of the event except for that one, and it's just a little bit, just doesn't seem to make sense.
Okay, Stuart, thank you. Any questions for Stuart? Okay, there are no questions. Well, Representative Lynn and Ledoux have stated to me that they want to hold the bill, and Guttenberg as well. Why don't you tell me why, and then we'll hold it.
Well, I would like to hold it. This is not as easy as it first appears, and I would like to explore with legal the possibility of some amendments maybe to fix this bill. And I could do conceptual amendments now, but I don't want to do conceptual. I'd rather talk with legal and maybe come up with some appropriate amendments that would be in the proper language with the intent that I wish to have here. I can either do that or offer conceptual amendments now.
Why don't you, could you tell me at least the subject matter of the amendments?
Well, one subject matter would be to limit to no-cost PSAs. That might be one amendment. Another amendment might be to expand it somehow to stop the broadcasting of that promotes the rad raising, which was originally intended only to help the Elks Club out at the fair, where it's already expanded. And
so you mean to prohibit the commercials?
Yeah, and I think this bill would be a perfect vehicle to do that.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, Representative, we'll go to Ledoux, then Guttenberg.
Yeah, just a point of clarification. I didn't ask you to hold the bill.
Okay.
I just counted the votes.
I misunderstood. Okay, I misunderstood. We'll go to Representative Roeperig, then Representative Guttenberg.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, actually, I was thinking along the same lines as Representative Lynn about the
finally did it.
The animal classes. Well, no, we have several bills together. Right?
I know we do.
No, but I've checked out the statute in the so-called rat races. It's really called the animal classics, which is relates to subsection A, rodents, and also birds with their stuff, whatever. So that's what an animal classic is. So we could just exclude the, after, on line 6, after classic, exclude animal classics.
I don't want to do that yet. So we'll.
And then we can have an exceptional amendment on the other one if that's what he wants to do to move the bill. So I don't know.
Representative Guttenberg.
Thank you. Maybe these be addressed to Mr. Prather. What are the restrictions? I mean, FCC apparently leaves these up to this decision up to the state. I wasn't aware of that. But I know there are other restrictions out there in society. For example, unless it's changed, the post office has a strict prohibition against using the postal service for distributing or advertising media to such an extent that the newspapers print two editions, one to be mailed, with one that's normally given out, and one that gets mailed to their subscribers. But I'm wondering if there are any other places where there are prohibitions. I'm surprised the FCC leaves this up to the state, personally.
Representative Guttenberg, I'm only aware of a U.S. postal prohibition against mailing raffle tickets. That's illegal.
Okay. Well, what we'll do is, because there's enough folks interested, even if one had an interest in, before we get to Representative Ledoux, let me just conclude here. Whenever someone has a urgent amendment that they want to do and have drafted in advance of the next meeting, I'm happy to hold the bill. And I hear enough folks on the committee want to do that. And Representative Ledoux, I hope you're going to bring up this too, because that's
right. That's
good
exactly
point.
Great, what I was going to say. That at this bill, the fiscal note refers to internet, email, and websites, and yet the substance of the bill doesn't say anything about that. And so I was just wondering whether how the sponsor would look at an amendment, you know, expanding it to internet and email.
Those venues as well. Maybe you can get back to us on that, just to have her, and maybe we could talk. Sure, we could ask Stuart and Rick, but I don't know if they'd be able to answer that. Yes, on that.
Can we do internet? Because that's federal. Is it not?
Yeah. Distribution methods. Read this. Ask Mr. Prather. I think you'll say that.
Mr. Prather,
what about the electronic conduct?
We view this bill as authorizing the use of the internet to conduct charitable games.
Through broadcasting.
Okay. Through broadcasting.
To prohibit it?
To permit it.
So it would be already covered that you could send an internet, you could send an email or have a website that says come to the Boy Scout and Girl Scouts raffle.
Can I just ask where it says that in the bill?
I'd read it the other way. Well, maybe you're right. I read it the other way if I was asked.
Well, in our regulations, we have a regulation that says that that broadcasting includes the internet.
That's in the regulation.
Right. Yeah, so it would be proscribed. It says you may not use broadcasting here to promote or conduct charitable gaming activities. So you can't use an internet. Right, unless it's a raffle,
unless it's
a fish derby or classic.
You could promote a fish derby or a classic on the internet. You couldn't conduct an activity,
right?
A fish derby or a classic on the internet.
And you couldn't promote a raffle or lottery on the internet either.
If you have a bill which defines broadcasting to the television and radio transmission, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and that doesn't mention internet or email, wouldn't you then have a regulation that might be inconsistent with the actual statute?
Technical people have advised us that this definition in the statute meets the definition of the internet.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other comment? Hearing none, then I was just drawing a can of worms, because that's what this bill is. Then I will hold the bill, and we will have our next meeting at normal time, 3:15 on Friday, and Friday the 24th. And we appreciate you allowing us to pass out two of the bills, committee. And we will now all hug Representative Rookberg. We adjourn at 5:20.